Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The countdown to the Euros begins. Southgate invites a few more to the party and Brighton are better than Real Madrid. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Wednesday, the 26th of May. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Welcome along, ladies and gents. Jim, Andy and Jules here with you for this Wednesday Football Ramble. The season's over, boys. Bit of a relief. It's over now. Longest season ever.
It was like, it was the shortest season ever and also the longest season ever at the same time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I know, right? It's worrying, isn't it? Because I feel like they're just going to condense more and more and more football in and we won't notice while that happens.
It's only like 80 days until the next season begins.
Yeah, I mean, going forward, obviously, I don't think anyone really wants to repeat this experience from either a fans, players or media perspective. But having said that, don't you think we should have more Thursday afternoon football?
There is a space. It is the pre-kend, isn't it?
A pre-kend, I like it.
Yeah, the football pre-kender.
Well, hey. you know how when you're at school, everyone does nothing after lunch on Wednesday because you play sport? Like, if we had a designated...
Is that what happens? It's been a long time since
I can't remember.
You've got children. You know what it's like at school.
Oh, no. They're not at that point yet.
Are they
but
not?
Obviously, I just had more glorious victories on Wednesday afternoons than anyone else. I think that would be really nice if we, like, wrote a weekday afternoon off across Europe because of the time difference. It wouldn't really work over the world for just, you know, football.
Europa Conference League?
That's already in there. So we'll make a new one.
You've spotted an opportunity there, haven't you?
Well, look, as soon as the season ends, as it's a tournament summer, it means that we are counting down to the Euros. And just a couple of days after the Premier League season ends, we get this new squad announcement for England from Gareth Southgate yesterday, where he has added in a few more players, a 33-man squad, which in the next week he has to go back down to the 26, which was already extended from 23. I feel like they keep extending it.
Yeah.
And before you know it, it'll be on 50 players. And everyone will get in.
He's just trying to sneak everyone in.
It's a chance for you, Jim.
Yeah, that'd be good. It would actually be a nightmare. I'd let everyone down and they'd all hate me.
But yeah, this squad announcement yesterday. So 33 players have made Gareth Southgate's squad for this week. And then I think he's got to narrow it down by June the 1st, which is next week, Tuesday, for the actual 26 that will go to the Euros with England. How much can these extra players prove themselves to Gareth Southgate in a week?
I don't think they can. I think it's covering himself for every eventuality. And I can understand why people think it's some sort of needless, weird psychodrama with no sort of certainty. But I kind of understand where he's coming from, because obviously after this season, the head count is probably more complicated than ever before. Plus, you've got English teams in, well, three English teams in the two finals over the next couple of days, almost leading up to the point where they have to announce the final squad on Tuesday. So isn't it better? Well, I'm interested to know what you think. Is it better to think I'm a member of the squad rather than I'm a reserve and I've just been called up because someone else has been dropped out? Because I think there are question marks over enough of those players, and not just the ones that are playing in the finals, that it is quite possible that some ones he would normally pick will get chopped.
Yeah, I think that does make a lot of sense. You know, because you don't want to feel like you're there as it's like a temp almost. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like if you were filling in for somebody else because they dropped out. And also, I think you're right to point out just how many question marks there are. I mean, obviously Harry Maguire is a bit of a doubt. Southgate said he doesn't know if he'll be available in 3 days or 3 months. Obviously, he's still being assessed and they're still waiting to see what the details of his injury are. Got someone like Jordan Henderson, who's barely played. Heard earlier that he's not played since February. And hasn't played in midfield since December.
Yeah,
so you've got that to consider
that
as well.
Crazy.
This kind of goes back to Jules' point, doesn't it? You know, if Gareth Southgate needs to have a look at someone, that someone is probably Jordan Henderson, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think there's just, more so than ever, there are so many little injuries and little kind of issues that aren't quite resolved that I think it just makes sense to have a look at these players. And I feel like players like Ben Godfrey and Ben White are probably being effectively shown around the place, like for the future, like while he's got an opportunity to take a quite high intensity camp with a lot of pressure on it, going into something tangible and very, very real.
It's the Platinum Walcott package.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So I think, yeah, I mean, he's faced a little bit of criticism for this, isn't he? But I think it makes sense.
You know, when you go on holiday, which I'm dreaming of right now.
I just about remember that, yeah.
And they take you up to the room and they go, if you're in a fancy hotel, then the person that carries the suitcases goes, this is the TV. This is how it works.
Yes.
This is, these are the sliding doors that go out to the balcony. This is how you open them. This is the toilet. Thanks for pointing it out, mate.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do you reckon that's what Southgate's doing with Ben
White?
Are you
saying he's trying to get a tip?
Might be. but this is the thing is, as you say, Jim, there's been a few players that have been called up for the first time, and this is so exciting for them. You know,
yeah.
let's start off in defence then and work our way through the team. Ben White from Brighton called up for the first time. Ben Godfrey also called up for the first time, along with Aaron Ramsdale. Nick Pope, unfortunately, has been ruled out this summer with a shoulder injury. But in goal, we'd probably assume that Jordan Pickford is still going to be the first choice for England. But Aaron Ramsdale getting his first call up is still a really exciting time for him as a player. In terms of the defenders, though, I personally think that his reasoning for calling Ben White up to the squad is more of a future thing. He was asked in his press conference yesterday, why did you go for Ben White over Lewis Dunk in terms of Brighton defenders? Because Lewis Dunk has been called up already for England, and his answer was he's younger.
Yeah.
Now, that says to me that there are a few players that he's probably picked for this 33-man squad, as we've already said, looking out for players that might be injured that he needs to replace with. But I think also looking ahead to the future, because we're only a year and a half away from the World Cup, and this squad could look quite different come the World Cup in a year and a half's time. So I think that there's a little bit of kind of future planning in there as well. But also I think Gareth Southgate, from what I've heard him say in his press conferences, likes a bit of flexibility in the team.
Mm.
He's mentioned that already with Trent Alexander-Arnold, the fact that he could even play in midfield as well as at right back, where we've got loads of good options. And I think with Ben White, what we've seen this season at Brighton is that has the ability to play in defence, but also as a central midfielder too. And I reckon that he's maybe looking at him, not necessarily for the Euros, but possibly for the future, and just kind of bedding him into the squad, as you pointed out.
Yeah, 100%. Which is encouraging, isn't it? Because, I mean, after any sort of international tournament, you always wonder, even if it goes well, if the manager's going to stick around. But I guess because these two are so close together, we probably are going to have Southgate for that entire time.
Yeah, hope so.
And, I mean, this has worked really well for him, isn't it? I mean, the squad now, compared to the squad from the 2018 World Cup, is so different. There's been so much churn. Mm. And it all in a positive direction. There's a lot of really technically gifted players there that are a lot more exciting than that squad. This is just another part of that process, isn't it? But, I mean, I think the main thing I find unusual about that, where he spoke about the versatility of some of these players, particularly the right backs, he did talk about how he sees Trent Alexander-Arnold as being able to play in midfield. And I think, like, that's just deflection, though, isn't it? Because imagine if he starts the first game of the tournament and Trent Alexander-Arnold is playing in the middle. We all know he could do a job there. We all know he'd be good there and would probably be brilliant there if he actually played there often. But he doesn't. Yeah. So it's like, you're just saying that to deflect away from this issue. I mean, like, it's been the thing that's made a lot of headlines. People were worried that Alexander-Arnold wouldn't even make the 33-man squad. But, like, you know, we were talking earlier in the season about how his form had dipped a bit and maybe that was a little bit of a concern. He's come roaring back into his best form. And, I mean, for me, he has a sort of delivery that David Beckham had. And we've not had a player that can put a ball into the box in that way since Beckham. And that is such a valuable asset that whatever the issue is that is making this, what seems like a no-brainer of a pick, so complicated, I think needs to be put aside for that. For that reason, especially when you've got someone like Harry Kane who can, like, score with his arse or his ankle when he's facing the wrong way or whatever, someone who can, like, put away those half chances.
That's the thing. I agree with you in that I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's quality should put him past the form argument. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's had a little dip in the season,
I agree.
To me, it was unusual him being left out of the squad just because he's had a dip in form, because he's good enough that he should be able to ride that out, or England should be able to let him ride that out. Having said that, if we're talking about form, it's really, really hard to argue against Trippier and James. Mm. James has got that versatility. He's got that intelligence. He's got that power as well, that physical power that's part of the physical power that Chelsea have.
Yeah.
If you look at Trippier, his season has been so good, and it's been something that has been talked about quite a lot in Spain as they've analysed the Atletico title win over the last couple of days. And the 10-game bit where he missed in the middle of the season, basically he created a title race, because if he plays those 10 games, it's not going down to the last game of the season. They really missed him and he was so vital. The fact that he's played right back, right wing back, he's really developed since he's been over there. And, you know, we've seen this with, you know, people in their initial squads leaving Sancho out and stuff, that it is quite easy to be out of sight, out of mind. But there has been a kind of social media reaction to people sort of, I guess, underestimating Trippier, really, hasn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, and Southgate even made the point that, again, so that he can play at left back, which we have seen him do.
Mm. I'd rather he didn't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is starting to worry me now, Gareth. I think it's a bit of a Rubik's Cube, isn't it? There's always going to be... There's so many good players available in the squad and just outside of the squad that unless England win the Euros, there's always going to be, oh, this should have happened, or that should have happened, or he should have picked him, he should have played him there. Yeah.
It's tricky, isn't it? But then you think that if he doesn't, say, for example, he doesn't include Trippier in the 26th squad, you've got a title winner that you're leaving out. If you then... you'll have Chelsea fans that have watched more of Reece James this season than Liverpool fans have watched of Trent Alexander-Arnold, going, how can you pick Trent over Reece James?
He could yet be a Champions League winner as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's between James and Alexander-Arnold. I'm not saying that should be the choice, but that is the choice.
I think that's true.
It's very interesting, and it'll be intriguing to see who he ends up going for, and we've only got to wait a week to find out. In terms of midfield options, we've already mentioned Jordan Henderson, who is back in the squad, but as you mentioned, he hasn't played for so long, Jim, that you can imagine that he will pick him anyway, because he's been England captain before, Liverpool captain, et cetera, et cetera. I think when we go a little bit further up the pitch in terms of attacking midfield players, that's where it gets a bit more interesting. So Jude Bellingham and James Ward-Prowse have both made it into the squad. They were perhaps two of the doubts coming into this. And we will come on to the forwards in a bit, Andy, but just first on Jude Bellingham and his season at Dortmund. He fully deserves, from what I've seen, to be in the England squad.
100% has to get picked. I mean, I think there's... I've spoken to Marcus about this, and I know he's spoken about it on Lions Watch. There's an argument that he starts, I think. He's been so good.
Wow.
Just as I said on the Patreon live stream with Marcus and Kate, where we talked about it last night, you've got to put the age out of the picture. It's just as relevant for him as it was for Wayne Rooney back in the day, even if they're two very different sorts of players. Because
he doesn't play like a... Is he 17?
Exactly. Yeah. He's 17. He's so strong.
Incredible.
He's so physically developed. He's so mature in his decisions. He can... There is not another midfield player like him in the squad, because he can sit, because he can go box to box, because he doesn't need to be asked to get stuck in. There's nothing tentative about him. And he's been Dortmund's best midfielder this season. And bearing in mind that he's adapted from, you know, a struggling championship club to playing for a Champions League level club, and all the players who you could have reasonably expected to, like, hold his hand while he gets used to the Bundesliga, be it Axel Witsel, who's missed a lot of the season, even though he's in the Belgian squad, be it Thomas Delaney, who's been in and out of form. Not only has he not had those next to him for a lot of the season, he hasn't needed them. His performances speak for themselves.
Yeah.
I know it's easy to get really excited about this England squad. I'm going to be boring here, I'm sorry. It's really easy to get excited about this England squad and go, just fling them all in.
Yeah.
Grealish, Foden. I know you want to do that, Jim.
I do.
You're popping on the studio England waistcoat, yeah, aren't you? And picking your 11. But the reality is, you win international tournaments by playing quite containment style, boring football.
Yeah.
Even if you look at France, who had one of the most exciting squads that you can think of in World Cup 2018, and that is going to be more so after a season like this. So those slow and steady players, obviously it's not what the Premier League does best, I think are actually quite important. And Gareth Southgate, who's been criticised for his circumspection, going back a little bit, he's got totally the right idea. If you're aiming to win a tournament, that's what you need to
do. What you're trying to say, Andy, is that Jim's on like the 7% lager and you're on the 0% alcohol free.
I'm having half a glass of wine and I brought the car keys with me.
And I haven't eaten.
Perfect combination. A little bit annoyed about James Maddison not making the squad. I feel a bit sorry for him because I think he's been so good.
Yeah.
And he's actually been, to me, in a fairly similar situation as Jack Grealish. Yes, Jack Grealish is probably a better player overall and more what England need, and I think it would probably be more important to the England team right now than James Maddison. But in terms of they had their injuries roughly at the same time, they've both come back roughly at the same time. So I just feel a bit sorry for him that he's missed out, really.
Yeah, I'm not surprised though.
No,
because,
me either.
I mean, he just doesn't fit Southgate's style, does he? And I don't think it's personal. Because they
can't
just
imagine if it was personal.
Yeah.
Poor guy. But,
yeah, I don't really know where that came from. I don't think Southgate just thinks he's a dick. It's interesting to me that he's never even seemed to consider the idea of setting up a team in a style that might suit having a player like Maddison in there, because Maddison is so good. But then I guess these are the constraints of international football, right? You get so little time that you don't want to necessarily completely restructure your tactics just for the sake of potentially changing it for 10 minutes in a game later on.
He's so good, but is he good enough to build a team around? I think maybe
probably
he's
not
in that sort of nether place, isn't he?
Yeah.
Still young though, still time to get in that squad for possibly the next tournament or the one after. In terms of strikers, talking about feeling sorry for people, I do feel sorry for Patrick Bamford because...
Yeah. Oh God, I was expecting Danny Welbeck. Oh no!
That guy Welbs. No, I do feel sorry for Patrick Bamford because...
Not a tournament without Welbs.
Because he got 17 goals this season, 7 assists. That's actually more than Ollie Watkins and more than Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and he's not made the squad. And we've heard him in his interviews. He's been so frank and so honest in his post-match interviews saying, you know, obviously, I wouldn't ever expect to get into the England squad, but I would love it if I did, and I've just got to keep working hard and hope that that call happens. And it hasn't, and I just would have loved to. It just would have meant so much to him, wouldn't it? And I know it means everything to the others as well, but he's had such a good season, and it just kind of reminds me of, I think there was, I can't remember the year it was, but Darren Bent had just come up to the Premier League at the time, and I think only a couple players had scored more goals than him, and he missed out on the England squad that year, and it kind of has sort of similar feeling to that, if you know what I mean.
I think it's fair enough not to pick him.
He
has had a good season, but he's had a good season that is out of context with the rest of his career. He's not been...
Is it a fluke?
Well, we don't know. We'll find out next season, I suppose. And as well, if really it's all about backing up Harry Kane, isn't it?
Yeah.
And is he the style of player who can do that? I can totally see. I know people have had their doubts over Dominic Calvert-Lewin's form over the last little while, but you know what? He's done it for England before. He's already used to the squad. I think if you're talking about playing to the strengths of the squad and bringing the likes of Foden, Sterling, Sancho, all those other players into play. Calvert-Lewin can play that role a lot better. You don't know what you're getting with Bamford at international. I think it'd just be taking a flyer. It would be a nice story, but I don't think it would be a wise pick. I think
such a romantic, aren't I? I want the nice sentimental pick.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean though. Because I think, yeah, if you were to pick entirely on form, there's an argument for Bamford, but I think the timing might be a bit wrong as well, because as you say, Calvert-Lewin has had that experience within the squad and he's done it for England. I think you can't overlook how important it is to have players who have been involved in the setup, to know what it's like, to know that squad, to kind of have, you know, heard Southgate's instructions and had those training sessions, because you don't have to get Dominic Calvert-Lewin up to speed. You know what I mean? He's part of that group already. You do have to do that with Patrick Bamford if you pick him, and there's basically no time to do that. So I think it's just unfortunate for Bamford. I think he has a lot to bring, and I think, because it is the backup for Kane position, you're absolutely right, and I think he could bring something to that, but so can Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I don't think there's much between them.
A quick word on Sancho, Andy, just because a lot of people may not watch him week in, week out like you do. Is there any chance he misses out on the 26?
No way. I think the front three for the 11 picks itself, as I said on the Patreon last night, it's Kane, Foden, Sancho. I think it has to be. The only player who you could possibly argue is playing better in 2021 in this England squad is Mason Mount.
All right, well, we'll find out who makes that 26 for Gareth Southgate next Tuesday on June the 1st. He's going to be making his full squad announcement for the Euros. Right, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to get to some of your emails. We're going to go through some of our pre-season predictions. Oh, God. And we're going to be talking a little bit about Sergio Aguero and his legacy.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Ollie, I know it's half-time in the tie, but that's an incredible advantage. Do you feel like the job is done?
No, don't feel like the job is done, but it was a good job done.
Oh, God, it's so awkward.
That's brilliant.
That is too awkward. We're going to talk a bit more about Manchester United and, of course, the Europa League final against Villarreal a little bit later. That is on tonight. But first, it's time for this.
Rumble, show the football run, show the football. I want to know where you're from. too. So I'm sending you a quality jingle.
Show at footballramble.com.
Really like his hair.
Thank you, Miller T. Evans, for one of those jingles. Get them into us if you want to send any more in. Show at footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramblegym.
Yep.
Not Football Ramble Jim, just yeah. Football Ramble. Over to you, Jim.
Yeah, so we've had a an email from someone called Drew DeRosier. I think that's right.
Name.
What a name indeed. Drew says, and I promise this isn't me secretly writing in. He says, I've had a few days to think about this and I really think more needs to be made of how bad Spurs' season was. Harry Kane was a top goalscorer and top assister, and in his recent interview with Gary Neville, Sir Alex Ferguson's first three players listed when asked which modern footballer he'd want to coach were Kane, Ali and Son. The greatest manager of all time looks at your squad and says, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. And the best you can do is get into the European Conference League group thing. Shame. It'll all be fine, though, when new manager Roberto Martinez replaces Kane with 37-year-old Aruna Kone. yeah, because obviously Spurs have been linked with Roberto Martinez, which would be odd.
Do you think it would be odd?
Surely it's Nuno, isn't it? That's the main reason I think it would be odd.
Mm. I could see Roberto Martinez going there, yeah.
I can as well. Mm. I can. I've worked with him quite a bit this season. He is a fascinating man. He's incredible to work with. One of the best pundits I've worked with. He knows everything about every player. He watches every single game of football. Some of the stuff that he was telling me about players is stuff that you just don't hear other pundits talk about. It seems weird to even call him a pundit because I just see him as the Belgian manager. But he's fascinating. You can sit in a room with him and just have the most incredible conversations.
It is amazing, though, isn't it? When you consider, like, a lot of coaches are really not good pundits because it's plainly obvious, obviously not in his case because he's the current head coach, but, you know, that they're sitting there marking time between jobs. More importantly, I think he'd look excellent in the Tottenham training kit. that purple business always looked weird on Mourinho.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
Maybe I mean, if there wasn't enough reasons to feel weird about it when he
yeah,
arrived
exactly,
there.
Exactly.
We've got one from Dan Turbot here. Long-time listener, first-time emailer, as I finally have something to write in about. Pretty big shout, but I'd love to hear of another listener who's made better predictions than the below. Winner, Man City. Liverpool fell away at the end of last season, so I thought there would only be one winner.
Correct.
Relegated teams, Fulham, West Brom and Brighton. Out of three isn't bad.
This is shit, Dan. I'm not having it.
Bad attitude,
he does say sorry, Jules.
All right.
Yeah. Dark horse leads, slightly controversial, but I think it's still a tick. First manager to be sacked, Dean Smith. Okay, just skip this one. A top scorer, Harry Kane. Mm-hmm. Most red cards, Lewis Dunk. This has got to be one of the best calls I've ever made.
Does he have a thing against Brighton?
I think that's clear. Player of the season, Bruno Fernandes, though, will probably be Ruben Dias. Mm-hmm. Notable mad shit, fan protest on the pitch at West Ham. Ignore the last three words and it actually happened.
To be fair, that is quite incredible.
Pretty
and
great.
He did send a screenshot in as well.
He did.
From September with those on. So we can prove that is indeed correct. And those were Dan's actual pre-season predictions. Yeah. I mean,
pretty great.
Quite impressive.
It is.
You got it wrong on Brighton. But other than that...
And is it pre-season if you made it in September?
Yeah, it's pre-season enough.
I suppose post-transfer window, is that fair?
Yeah, although I did mine way before that, and that's why mine is so terrible.
Should we hear your prediction?
You set that up perfectly.
I did. I can see Jim smiling as he's looking at them, why...
I had to experience the shame of this the other day, so why not? So I've got Andy and Jules' predictions here, so we'll go through it category by category. So for the Premier League winner, go Andy first, because that's the order I've got it in front of me. Andy, you went for Man City. So
did I?
You did, yeah.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, you seem surprised by that.
Yeah.
Do you now disagree?
No, I don't remember any of these picks. I remember one of the relegation picks that I made was definitely wrong, but that's the only prediction I remember making.
Okay. Well, Jules, you went for Liverpool.
Yeah.
That's what I also went for. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we weren't to know that half the team would be unavailable for most of the season. Relegated teams, Andy, you've gone for Aston Villa.
Yeah, that was the one.
Did not quite work out. Fulham and West Brom. So, obviously, those guys are absolute toast. So that's pretty good, 2 out of 3. Jules, for the relegated teams, you went for Aston Villa, Fulham and West Brom.
Okay, 2 out of 3. You know what? I think a lot of people prior to the season beginning would have put Villa in there because it was before they made their signings, before they tied Jack Grealish down. I thought Jack Grealish would leave. I didn't think they'd sign Ollie Watkins. I didn't think they'd get a decent striker. And Ross Barkley made a massive difference to the start of their season. So screw you. Mine were before the season began. If I'd done it after the transfer window closed, I wouldn't have put Villa in it.
You see, this is what it's about. Accepting one's mistakes with grace. That's what it's all about.
Everyone knows I'm a sore loser.
So, first manager to be sacked. Andy, you went for Dean Smith, as did I.
Yeah.
He is still in the job. Jules, you went for David Moyes, one of the contenders for the manager of the season, the ferryman.
Yes, I did. Well, the way they ended last season,
yeah.
I could not see this season coming at all. It was one of the biggest surprises.
Anyone who predicted a good Moyes season or a good West Ham season is either a blind optimist or a liar.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is an amazing achievement.
Hell of a job.
It's ridiculous.
Absolutely, yeah. Hell of a job. It's brilliant. And
I actually
well
thought I put Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Right.
So that actually surprised me that I put him.
Well, that
I reckon
also
it was between the two of
would
them.
Have been very wrong.
the thing is, this is so long ago.
I know.
These predictions feel as if they were done by a different person.
Yeah.
It's more exciting listening to them than I thought it would be.
I
can't remember anyone.
I was quite ill when I did mine.
Yeah, just completely delirious.
It literally was a different person.
Yeah. So for top scorer, Andy, any memory of who you went for? Or whoever, you know, the bloke from the past who picks for you?
I think that man... capital T, capital M, probably went for capital T, capital W.
He went for Timo Werner, that's right. And Jules, you went for Timo Werner.
Yeah, I did.
A few of us did yesterday as well.
Loads of us have gone for Timo Werner.
Because we all thought he was going to be sort of the cold, dead-eye Terminator that he looked like he would be from the Bundesliga.
What
and it hasn't quite happened.
What I meant was that he'd get a lot of assists, which he did.
Right. Goal involvement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's called.
I argued yesterday that if you put the offside goals, he probably got about 40.
Yeah, 100%.
You know,
I'm kind of feeling responsible. Have I convinced you all that Timo Werner would be amazing in the Premier League?
Yeah, maybe. I think you might have done. He mugged us all off.
He was
insidious bias.
He was in my very first fantasy team of the season as well. Quickly got removed.
Yeah, you see, I made no changes to my fantasy team throughout the season, but I did find time to ditch Timo Werner.
Wow. So most red cards, Andy, you went for Kagler-Sionchu. It was obviously Lewis Dunk that got them. Jules, you went for Alexander Mitrovic. And I can see why that might have been a...
If he'd have played enough.
If he'd
choice.
Played
yeah.
more,
yeah.
he'd have been sent off.
Scott Parker's fault.
Player of the season, Andy, you went for James Rodriguez. We're not quite sure on who that's settled on, but I don't think it's going to be Rodriguez. And you... You, Jules, went for Sadio Mane. There's a little note here that says, recently described this as the worst season of his career and requested a medical examination to check nothing was wrong with him because he was so concerned by his form. So that one's not quite worked out,
is
it?
I'm really surprised I put Sadio Mane. I don't remember that.
It's difficult at that stage of the season, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think, as well, I was probably looking up at who I picked to win the league and thought Liverpool, and thought who's going to have a good season for Liverpool. It's Mane's turn. I mean, he ended the season well. Final game against Palace. Got a couple of goals.
Yeah,
better late than ever. Yeah,
still doesn't count. So notable mad shit. Andy, you went for Marcelo Bielsa moving away from sitting on the club-branded bucket to sit on a cool box in order to arrest an alarming slump in form, thereby causing a rift with the club's commercial department and prompting his resignation. It didn't quite pan out that way.
Could have happened.
Did he change to a cool box at one point?
Well,
it could have happened.
He had a cool box before when he was at Marseille, because, of course, there was that famous moment when, in front of a full Stade Velodrome, his very diligent assistant brought him an espresso, popped it on the top of the cool box, and he sat on it.
No.
And so he burnt his ass in front of 60,000 people.
Oh, no one wants that. You don't want a burnt, wet ass,
do
you?
No.
So, yeah, for the notable matchup of the season, Jules, you went for Mitrovic getting the most red cards in a season ever, which, again...
God, I really hate Fulham, don't I? I didn't realise.
Yeah, but you must have identified them as a rival that you needed to bury at the time.
Yeah, clearly. Wow, that's quite amusing.
Yeah.
Love
so
that.
There we go. Those are Andy and Jules' predictions from the start of the season.
We were very wrong. it's probably a good time.
We were
time
all very wrong, apart from Dan Turbutt.
Yeah, it's probably a good time for me to bring up the fact that when we redid our predictions for BT Sport in January, someone screen grabbed my redone predictions halfway through the season, posted them on Twitter thinking that they were my pre-season predictions, where basically everything was spot on. And everyone was commenting like, Jules Breach knows our onions. I was like, yeah, fucking do. Yeah, I do. I'm not going to correct anyone on that.
Fraud.
Those are funny. Hey, one more season, Mitrovic in the Premier League. He'll get the most red cards. Yeah. Just let it happen, all right?
Yeah, it's bound to happen.
Right, let's talk a little bit about Sergio Aguero. Obviously, it was his last Premier League game for Manchester City on Sunday, and he capped it off by coming on as a substitute and scoring a couple of goals. He's just been an absolutely sensational player in the Premier League era. And it feels strange that we're potentially saying goodbye. We obviously still don't know 100% where he's going to end up. Looks like it's Barcelona, but if he could still go to another Premier League club. But if this is the end of his Premier League career, then I feel like it's a good time to talk about what legacy he leaves behind. Because right now, the last couple of seasons for him haven't been the best because he's been plagued with a few injuries. But his numbers are incredible. And he is a player that I think we are going to be talking about forevermore in terms of his greatness in the Premier League. 247 goals in 347 appearances for Manchester City. 184 of those were in the Premier League, making him the record goal scorer for a single club. That has got to be what he ends up being remembered for, Andy.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think it's easy to boil it down all to the goal in 2012. I mean, that was even, the time was even on the little thing they presented to him. Mm-hmm. What wasn't it? And
Aguero!
Exactly. It is the most iconic Premier League goal. Obviously, it's been shown quite a few times recently since his departure has been announced. And every time it gets me. It's amazing. And I'm not a Manchester City supporter. I'm Manchester City agnostic, I suppose. And, every time, it's incredible. It is absolutely unbelievable. But, of course, there's so much more to him than that. And I think what's interesting is the fact that, despite the fact that Manchester City have been so well-backed over the last 10 years, for at least the first half of that spell, they had to wrap him in cotton wool because he totally carried them.
I think with Aguero, he's sort of emblematic of City's rise to become a super club and to become, you know, a part of the top six or whatever you want to call it, because, well, he's an icon for them, isn't he? And I mean, players come into the club now, they're looking at club greats that have come before them, and it is Sergio Aguero, it's David Silva, it's Yaya Toure, it's not like Giorgio Samaras and Richard Dunn, and, like, you know, with respect to those players that have come before. And I think he's probably the best of that bunch, really, when you look at the impact his goals and his contributions have. I suppose you could make the same argument for David Silva quite easily as well, but still, he has just been so important to them sustaining their quality. Just like, you know, 20 plus league goals 5 seasons in a row. I mean, that
consistency, Jim, is what he will be remembered for. It's so rare, isn't it, to get a player like that who is so frightening for other teams. You see him on the team sheet and you just think, oh God, he's going to score today. Yeah. He's one of those players who has the ability to turn it on and score out of nothing. And he's one of those players as well who, there aren't many strikers, even prolific strikers, who will get double figures every single season, which is incredible enough in the Premier League as it is. He has the ability to, in a single game, you can, on any given day, say he could score a hat trick for 5 goals. I remember there was a Newcastle game a few seasons ago, it might have been like 2016. He scored 5 goals in one game. Like, he is that sort of player who has the ability to do that, and it's just incredible to watch because he's so ruthless.
But I think you're right in terms of the consistency, Jules, because conditions inevitably change in any league, but especially over the Premier League, and especially with the physical demands on a player as they age. Take another former Atletico striker, take Fernando Torres at his best for Liverpool, oh my god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unbelievable. But I remember him saying, like, when he was, like, just before his move to Chelsea, actually, which almost sort of preempting his failure, said, I don't know what to do for my next move because the Premier League has made me into a better player than I ever was before, but it's actually killing me physically. Mm. And so that turned out to be right. It did take a really bad physical toll on him. Whereas Aguero has coped with a lot of muscle injuries and just ploughed through them. Mm. And he's had to play in a very different way because, as we said, he was so important to Manchester City for especially those first 4 or 5 years. And I think you notice, particularly under Manuel Pellegrini, he stopped actually doing a lot of what made him so great, because at Atletico, it wasn't that he just scored the goals. The runs that he did down the channels, when he picked the ball up 30, 40 yards from goal and could make stuff happen, it was clear that, especially under Pellegrini, the sense was, we can't afford you to get injured, so maybe don't do so much other stuff. They took a lot of the physical load off him. And obviously that was a problem when Pep Guardiola arrived, because Guardiola was, why don't you do the other stuff apart from scoring goals? Funnily enough, it's what Radamel Falcao got when he arrived at Atletico, where the staff weren't really that convinced of him because Sergio Aguero was such an all-round player. They were like, well, this guy just scores goals. Like, what else does he do? And that forced Falcao to do more other stuff. But so I think in his latter years at Manchester City, Aguero, because he's prompted to by Guardiola, starts to find that old bit of his game, starts to do more all-round, re-assimilates himself back into the squad after the point when you think Gabriel Jesus is replacing him and he's totally getting phased out. And the reason that Jesus hasn't replaced him, people look at it as a fault of Jesus. I think a lot of it is just how good Aguero is.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a really good point.
You can't be dislodged. I still get the feeling he's actually a little bit underrated. Like, he's one of the best players the Premier League has ever seen. One of the best players the Premier League will ever see. And I feel like possibly it's part of a little bit of sniffiness towards Man City's rise.
I completely
agree. From he is emblematic of that time, as we said, when they sort of rose up to be a dominant force. And I mean, I remember, you know, supporting a club who were going to suffer at the hands of that. And it was just really like, oh God, this is happening again. There's going to be another Chelsea. You feel really resistant to it, really like you want them to fail. And I think perhaps Aguero's legacy will not be tainted by that at all, but that is perhaps why he's maybe not lionized in the way that some sort of previous greats have been during his career. But I think, you know, retrospectively, nobody can deny what an incredible player he is.
Totally. He also changed the way that Manchester City were thought of. Maybe, you know, as you say, there's a bit of sniffiness to them, and there's still a bit of sniffiness to them domestically. But if you're talking about how players internationally look at them, if Aguero doesn't stay, it's more difficult to attract other players, but he's this sort of beacon that makes them attractive.
On that whole sort of changing the way people look at Man City as well, having really nice players sort of helps with that. And yeah. Aguero is, from what friends of mine who have interviewed him have said, he is just the nicest guy. He's so humble with it as well, with everything that he's achieved. He's been quite open about the fact he didn't want to leave Man City. He actually wanted to retire in England. Yeah. One of my friends interviewed him last week just before the final game on Sunday, and they had a little bit of a joke. She interviewed him in Spanish, so there was no language barrier there at all, but they sort of had a little bit of a giggle about, oh, you know, what will it feel like when you come back to the Etihad? And he actually joked and said, oh, I hope they remember me. And she said, oh, all you have to do is get out that goal. All you have to do is get out that goal and show it to them. And he said, oh, me, that goal, like, that's me. And like, I just think that that is just so lovely and refreshing to hear. And he just seems like just such an all-round good guy, as well as just a phenomenal player. And wherever he ends up finishing his career, I mean, they will be lucky to have him. It looks as though it's going to be Barcelona, Andy. Do you think that'll be confirmed soon?
Yeah. And I'm not sure it's a great move for either of them, to be perfectly honest, because bear in mind that they binned Luis Suarez, not because he wasn't quality anymore, as he's proven this season, but because of his physical limitations. They're now signing another player of similarly amazing talent, but who injuries have kind of caught up with. But, you know, Barcelona is skint. I mean, it's just about a load of freeze from now on. I, for one, can't wait for the partnership between him and Memphis. Oh, it's going to be magnificent.
But does it not also help them keep hold of Messi? It's like, oh, come on, we've got one of your mates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's never gone wrong before, like letting your star player be the general manager. It'll be fine.
Let's stay in Spain, guys, because the big news on Monday was that Luis Enrique left Sergio Ramos out of his Euro 2020 Spain squad. That for me was huge news, but I'm such a Sergio Ramos fan, as many people will know who listen to Football Ramble. But it does mean that Brighton actually have more players in the Spain squad than Real Madrid do. So we are better than Real Madrid. That's because our goalkeeper, Robert Sanchez, is third choice goalkeeper. Yes, I don't care if he's third choice. He probably won't get a minute, but he's still in the squad.
He is still in the
squad. We're still better than Real Madrid right now.
The fascinating thing for me is that Enrique has only picked 24 players when he could have 26. So he could have taken Ramos. So easy.
He's done it on purpose, hasn't he?
Well, he did say, which I thought was fairly reasonable logic, that he wants all the players to feel like they could get a game.
Right.
And he feels that that's maybe not the case when it's 26. When you think of him at Barcelona, and it's kind of a hangover from the Pep Guardiola time, the idea is that you roll with a smaller squad where everyone's implicated. Having said that, Luis Enrique is quite a sort of confrontational chap,
yeah,
which is something that I really like about him. But you know, when he came out and talked
a
about
stirrer, basically,
you could say that not always deliberately, but when he came out and talked about it, he's like, yeah, I spoke to Sergio, and you know, I knew there'd be a big fuss about it whether I picked him or whether I didn't, and I didn't. So there you go. And interestingly, Sergio Ramos's reaction to that, where he could have really thrown him under the bus, said, yeah, I'm physically not ready for it. Although he has proved for Real Madrid,
I mean, he's a bloody good
cheerleader.
If I didn't get picked, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not fit. So that's why he's not picked me.
Absolutely.
I'd coat off the manager, wouldn't you?
I'm sure he's absolutely delighted for Enric Laporte as well, who's only just become Spanish. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, God. God, fuck off, mate.
Yeah, you're French, really. Piss off. You didn't make the French squad.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem really short-sighted to me to not take the 26, because the whole point is, like, players are very, very susceptible to muscle injuries and fatigue and various things, given how much football has been played over this short period of time. Like,
isn't that another argument for not picking Sergio Ramos, because he's got more muscle than anyone else, so he's got more muscles to get injured?
But it's another argument for not, like, just leaving two players out of your squad, like, full stop, isn't it?
I mean, after the River Plate story last week, you've got to fill up this spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
He could be in goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he'd be really good in goal.
I think he would. Yeah. Commanding.
Hey, Robert Sanchez needs that spot. We need to be better than Real Madrid, remember? Yeah. All right, let's talk a bit about the Europa League final. You know, all season I've been moaning about how there's too much football on and like, oh God, let's just have a night off, please. I'm now really bored. It's been 2 days and I haven't watched any football. It's been a really long two days.
Yeah,
and I am actually so excited for tonight's game. Villarreal, Man United in the Europa League final. Villarreal are going to be so tough for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been making me chuckle over the last few days in the lead up to the final. He said, I've played Football Manager and Championship Manager over the years and I've always been Man United. And now look at me. Here I am in a final with them.
It's adorable.
Why would you say that?
What an interesting line.
Like, why would you say that heading into the biggest match of your career as Man United manager so far? It's quite amusing, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite sweet, isn't it? It gives you the impression that actually he's a little bit of a football nerd.
Properly, which is cute.
You know, not surprising really, but he said he was very, very good at it, didn't he? He's like, I'm actually pretty good at it,
and
like,
hope so.
Talks up the game as like being a quite useful tool to teach you how to manage. It's like, I think you're just good at both things separately there, Ollie.
Oh goodness me. What kind of a threat will Unai Emery's Villarreal be tonight then, Andy?
Well,
they've
Unai,
been very good, haven't they?
If I can imagine Solskjaer playing Football Manager, I can imagine Unai Emery inventing the game.
Yeah.
He's that kind of guy. Look, I was saying before the semi, I would feel really pleased with him for him, because the way he was treated, especially when it started going wrong towards the end at Arsenal, was not nice, and he was always really decent about it, I thought. Mm. They've been pretty good this season. They've tailed off a little bit towards the end, and I think when you look at when his Sevilla, in the last of their three Europa League wins, beat Liverpool in 2016, I mean, they totally chucked it in at the end of last season. at the end of that season in La Liga. So I don't think you should make a correlation between the league form and what threat they'll pose Manchester United. The other thing is they've been better in those games than the results have actually suggested. They were pretty good against Real Madrid at the weekend as well. They've so much experience in that team.
Yeah.
And I think that really counts for something. So you can say that, you know, Villarreal haven't been here before in terms of like a European final, but they have got a lot of quality. And as well, the fact that Gerard Moreno, their best player and really one of the best players in Europe this season, has come back to his best in the last 3 or 4 weeks is super important. Yeah. I think it'll be quite close.
Yeah, and Unai Emery has previous of winning the competition. He knows how to do it, and that will always be a concern for the opposition. And what I love as well is that Fergie's travelled with the Man United team. So that'll be a big boost for the squad as well, I think, heading into that one, having the most successful manager at Manchester United being there as well to cheer you on.
I want to see him in formal shoes, not those pundit trainers, though.
Is it not a bit like being an Elvis impersonator where an actual Elvis is watching you for Solskjaer?
Oh, my God.
Because he's had it before, hasn't he? He's probably used to it by now.
I wonder whether Fergie will do a bit of a team talk.
All right, I thought you were going to say...
Imagine if he gave up. He can't do that, can he? He can't give up the team talk to his old boss.
If anyone's going to...
Yeah. That's what I mean.
I thought you were going to ask with the Elvis theme. I wonder if Sir Alex will turn up in a sort of black leather suit.
Oh, gosh. I cannot picture that.
Well, it's not as hot as most Mays. If ever you're going to get away with it, it's probably
fair,
now.
The Villarreal players wouldn't be talking about anything else, would they? It's like, is that... What's going on over there? What are they doing?
Oh, well, it could be the first major trophy that Man United win since their last Europa League trophy. That was 4 years ago with Jose Mourinho. So they need it, don't they, Jim?
Well, the cups are really all about ego, aren't they? So I don't know if they do.
All right, that is all from us today. If you enjoyed the show, head over to Apple Pods, wherever you get your podcasts, and drop us a review. It helps the show and helps people find us and helps new listeners get involved in some of this ramble goodness. Right, we're going to be back tomorrow. Kate, Andy, and... Oh, Andy and Jim, you're both back tomorrow. Look at that. I'm just going to be swapping seats with Kate. So enjoy that. She might be in wearing her new Spurs shirt. She probably will. She's been living in it the last couple of days. And don't forget that if you want to check out any of that extra special England stuff that Andy was talking about earlier on the Patreon, just head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/footballramble. See you soon, guys.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.